Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of reimagineonline.org, sparking the evolution of education choice. On this episode, senior writer Lisa Bowie talks with Diana Diaz-Harrison, founder of Arizona Autism Charter Schools. The school won the $1 million YAS Prize earlier this year and is working to expand its model of best practices at autism specialty schools across the United States.
Today, I have with me Diana Diaz-Harrison, lead founder and executive director of Arizona Autism Charter Schools. AZACS, as it's often called, won the $1 million YAS Prize last year for its innovative program that helps an underserved population in Arizona. Welcome to the podcast, Diana.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be invited, and I'm just honored that I can share my story through Step Up for Students.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. And congratulations on winning that $1 million YAS Prize. I mean, you must be so excited. Were you surprised to win the top prize?
I was 100% surprised. Yes, it was a very rigorous and fun competition. It was great to meet so many education innovators from around the country. And I was just honored to learn from them and form a community of edupreneurs. And to come out as the top prize winner is just a very humbling honor, but a testament to how important our work is in elevating teaching and learning for neurodiverse students and infusing their programming with innovation. So I was just so happy and thrilled that it's going to help us spread the word, have more opportunities to grow and replicate campuses, because really our type of specialty charter is needed everywhere.
Well, please, let's start with a brief overview of Arizona Autism Charter Schools, its mission, what grades it serves, how many students, and what your role is there.
So Arizona Autism Charter Schools is the first and only autism-focused charter network in the state of Arizona and in the Southwest. And I was inspired to start the school by my son, Sammy, who was diagnosed with autism when he was about 2. And here in Arizona, we were very fortunate to have amazing early intervention services, which really used best practices to reach Sammy, teach him new skills, help him with his challenging behaviors. And I was just happy that there was something that worked for Sammy. And I was excited for him to start school when he was about 5 years old and ready to start kindergarten. But sadly, when we went to kindergarten, all of those best practices that were used in his early intervention programs were not being used in school. So it was really hard and disappointing to fight for basic use of best practices and to know that that really wasn't a priority in mainstream public schools. So that is why I formed a group of parents and grandparents and professionals in autism and formed a founding team in 2012. And we were lucky enough in 2014 to get approval from our state board and open our first school.
Wow, that is great. What are those top best practices that you're talking about? I know there are certain therapies that are better than others.
Mm-hmm. Well, the most research-based therapy is called applied behavior analysis, or ABA. And that is what a lot of early intervention programs are based on. And it's a really great assessment tool to figure out a child's gap skills in the 3 core deficit areas that are a requirement to have an autism diagnosis. And those areas are not having good communication and not being very socially motivated and being very fixated on certain things are barriers to learning in a typical environment. So ABA practices seek to work on those skills so that a child is able to access learning in more common environments like group settings, school, the community, in your family home. And so every skill is broken down into its most discrete form and taught deliberately to kids through very data-driven instruction. to help students with those learning to learn gap skills that are very common for children on the spectrum. And really, when a child engages in high quality ABA, the difference is truly miraculous because you really find what makes them tick. You help them with those gaps, and then they can really flourish and do great things like we see every day at our school.
How did you figure out that Sammy was on the spectrum? What did you notice? I mean, he was diagnosed very early. Some kids, it's later. But what happened that made you suspect something was different?
It was a long time ago because he's 20 now. So I have to take myself back to that time. He was my first child. So it wasn't super obvious to me with the early signs because I was just so happy to be a mom. And he was such a delightful child. And he was very responsive to me. So whatever I taught him, he seemed to pick up happily and easily. We were even doing English and Spanish in my home because I speak Spanish. And I thought all of the little things I would teach him, imitating touch your head, touch your nose, all English and Spanish, he would do it. And it seemed to be going well in terms of baby milestones that kids are supposed to reach. But he did change at around 15 months. And all of those little skills that he had picked up easily, he was not demonstrating anymore. And then he lost that twinkle in his eye and he seemed more distant and more into his own little world. And then all I remember, and again, this is 18 years ago, is that he was really happy and cheerful prior to this. And then all of a sudden, there were just a lot of meltdowns, a lot of what I now know is it might have been sensory overload, and he was just having a hard time coping, but just a lot of meltdowns. So then that led us to seek evaluations, rule things out, get on waiting lists for evaluations and eventually programming. But then when we knew that he met all the criteria for autism spectrum, you know, it was hard news to receive. But now looking back on that, it was the best thing that could have happened because we were able to introduce the right therapies, the right programming, and I was able to be trained as a mom sooner rather than later.
It's always good the sooner you can get made aware and get training for that. Now, tell me more about your advocacy group that preceded the school. What all did you do with the advocacy group?
Yeah, so I mean, I quickly learned that many, many parents of children with autism had a hard time in typical public schools. Basically, it's very hard to be a special needs parent, really, because you have to fight and advocate for every little thing. Like 5 more minutes of speech, it becomes a big battle. We all knew that there had to be a better way where a school could prioritize best practices for kids with autism, and that would create an environment of collaboration instead of having to fight and advocate for every service. We thought there should be a school that already had embedded services that could be just modified by every child's needs, but nevertheless have mostly embedded services. And we knew that there were a lot of private schools that did this work, but those private schools were very expensive still today, you know, $40,000 to $50,000 a year. We did move to private school for a couple of years. And the ESA scholarship at the time covered some of it, but not all of it. And so it was still hard to keep up with that tuition. And so I did learn that in other states like Florida, there was already a tuition-free autism-focused charter. And I thought, we really need that in the state of Arizona. And I formed a group of parents who were like-minded and committed to that mission of opening a tuition-free autism-focused charter. We also engaged the best professionals in the field of ABA. And we knew it was a long shot because we thought the state has not recently approved any special population school. But we wrote a fantastic application using research-based support for the application, and we were successful in getting that passed in 2013.
Congratulations. Now, one of the things I've read about you is, and you didn't mention you're bilingual, you were in the broadcast industry and had been an anchor, reporter, and that sort of things. And you've used those connections that you established to help educate the Hispanic community about autism. And congratulations on your Emmy nomination for that, by the way. How was autism viewed then? Was it viewed any differently in the Hispanic community than it was, say, among other groups or the population at large?
Yes. When Sammy was first diagnosed, 18 years ago, the statistic was that one in 150 children were on the autism spectrum, and the incidence was lower among the Hispanic and African-American community and communities of color, whereas the most recent CDC statistics that just came out earlier this month tell us that 1 in 36 children are on the autism spectrum, and there are more children of color being diagnosed than 18 years ago when Sammy was diagnosed. And I think that the stigma that is associated with an autism diagnosis, it's kind of fading. People don't think of it as a death sentence anymore. We are offering so much hope along with other agencies in the community that children with autism can learn, they can thrive if their environment is set up using best practices that are known to lead to success for children with autism. And so I think that fear and the stigma have dissipated over the years because parents are more empowered with resources and tools they can use to help their child be the best version of themselves.
I'm curious, it sounds easy. I mean, you've got these best practices. Were they not being used in the public schools? And if so, why not?
That's really hard to say. I mean, I remember sitting in an IEP meeting and I was sharing at the Southwest Autism Center, they do this, this, and that, and it really works to help Sammy understand what is expected of him and learn. And, where are you doing this here? And I was told that the best is not a requirement in typical public school. Basically, you have to give a free and appropriate public education, but what's appropriate can mean different things to different people. To me, appropriate is use the best practices that work for these kids. For others who perhaps don't want to invest in the staffing time and money that it takes to do that, appropriate could look like anything from using eclectic strategies that may or may not work to basically babysitting. So appropriate can mean different things, but if you are a parent of a child on the spectrum, appropriate means using the best and what is known through research to produce the best outcomes. So I think that's where the rub is. Now more school districts are trying to adopt ABA practices, but they'll hire, one certified behavior analyst, which is the highest level certification to implement ABA. They'll have one that's on contract for a whole district or one that's hired to service kids across the district. Whereas we have that level of professional at each of our campus, and then that professional has a team of ABA professionals infusing and implementing ABA across all the instruction.
So I guess that's where the phrase good enough for government work applies, huh?
I don't want to be negative, but that's exactly right. Unless you are mission driven like we are, and our mission is to provide the best education for children on the autism spectrum and children with other special needs. And we are dedicated to doing that by having highly trained staff and putting all our resources into those team members and those classrooms to implement the best practices with fidelity. I think being close to the way that other parents feel regarding what best means, being committed to those small class sizes and 3-to-1 student to staff ratio. As a charter school, we have the power to do that. So I think the model really works well for us because although we have a ton of accountability, we also have the autonomy to set up our classrooms and our programs in a way that works best for kids on the spectrum.
What were the toughest challenges in getting off the ground and how did you overcome them? It sounds like you didn't have much trouble from your authorizer to get permission, but were there other logistical challenges?
I would say because we were a brand new startup, it was amazing to get authorized by our state board. Although, you know, that did take a little bit of work because some of our detractors thought kids with autism should be mainstream with neurotypicals as much as possible. But then that didn't make sense because people who have the means to pay for private school usually put their kids in specialty schools. So if a person needs to access that but doesn't have the funding to pay private tuition, then the model should be available tuition-free as a charter. That was a little bit of the pushback, but we did get through that. And we prove every year that our model is in demand because we always have more kids on our waiting list than kids that we can enroll. So the demand is there. I would say early on, the difficulty was raising enough capital to hire people and have a facility before the state funding started to roll in. But I did beg, borrow, and steal to make that happen. And my family supported me. And we did get CSP funding, which was super helpful. And now we have a track record of success and can raise the capital every time we want to open a new campus. And we do have another one on the way in Tucson, Arizona, opening in fall of 2023.
Wow. What is CSP funding?
So that's the Federal Charter School Program. That's what CSP stands for. And yeah, the Arizona Department of Education has a department that manages those startup funds for charter schools. And it's a very competitive and rigorous process to apply. But we had a strong application and we're really blessed to get that grant funding to open each of our campuses.
Well, you've certainly come a long way since opening the doors of that first campus in 2014. And you've got 3 campuses and a virtual school, and you have another brick and mortar on the way.
Exactly. Yes.
What has been the secret to that expansion?
Well, for sure, there is a clear and pressing demand from families of children with autism seeking schools that make children with autism the priority. There's also a very strong autism community. And so for parents who embrace their children's neurodiversity and have done a lot of great early intervention, they're used to being part of an autism community. And so they choose our school because they get autism community as part of their school. And I've been there, be a parent, having a child with autism in a mainstream school, but your child can't participate in any special events or the programs are really not prioritized. I remember I had both my kids. I have a neurotypical daughter and I had my boy with autism at a district school. And, you know, I was one of those moms that was first in line to attend curriculum night for both my kids. And they had a beautiful presentation for my daughter, who I think was in 3rd grade. You know, they showed the curriculum scope and sequence and what would be her outcomes in 3rd grade. And then I went over to what would be Sammy's class, and there was no presentation. There was nothing. It was crickets. And I was like, what? Why don't they care to explain what's going to happen in this classroom where they have children with special needs? So, you know, there was just one disappointment after another. And I thought, there really needs to be a school that prioritizes kids with autism. And so after knocking on a lot of doors, I realized that it would have to be me.
Well, I know a lot of people who are very, very glad for you and for those efforts. Tell me about the school itself and therapies that these kids need. Does the school offer all that in-house, or do they still have to go after school outside for a lot of this?
What's really great is that the therapy programs are embedded into the school day. So kids may have their classrooms, which are typically very small, you know, 9 to 10 kids, a lead teacher, and 2 behavior support staff. So if kiddos are working on acquiring some, you know, more positive behavior skills or working on catching up on communication, there's staff in the room that's working on that all day and taking data, making sure there's progress, both quantitative and qualitative. And then if kids have speech therapy, for example, as part of their program, the speech therapist will push in and run a small group station with all the kids who are working on similar goals. We also have occupational therapy for kids who are working on fine motor skills and age-appropriate play skills. We have a few students who have physical therapy as well. And then with ABA being the foundation of the school, all the staff members are working to help the students minimize or extinguish their behaviors that are barriers to learning and to increase their functional behaviors that help them navigate the classroom and the learning environment. So everyone gets ABA training and is very aligned in helping the kids move forward using a lot of positive reinforcement.
So what I hear you saying to me is basically this is all just sort of infused into their day and into their education, which I think is great.
Yes, exactly. You know, it's a little hard. They have their peer group. And then for it to have 1 or 2 kids pulled out for a speech session, for example, then they miss whatever was going on in their project-based learning or something else very cool that's going on in the classroom. So it is nice that our services are embedded and the professionals push in so that it's just part of the school day and part of the regular routine.
Yeah. Well, that is great that you don't have to have exhausted parents after school dragging their children to appointments.
Some parents still do that a little bit, but we're really happy to hear that parents don't feel like they have to do that because they get good services here at school. Because really, you know, if a kiddo has been in school from 8:30 to 3, they're pretty tired. They've been working hard. So it's just better for their quality of life to have a school that embeds all that for them.
Moving on to the YAS Prize. How did you learn about the YAS Prize? I know it's only now in its 3rd year, so it's very new.
Well, the YAS Prize team is very good about reaching out to schools of all kinds. In the competition, there are charter schools, private schools, micro schools. There are district schools who have special programs that they are putting into the competition. So I did hear about it in its very first year when we had all that disruption during COVID. And I did make an effort to put in an application, but just missed the deadline because we had so much additional work during COVID that I didn't make the deadline. But I was determined. I thought to myself, you know, if they offer this again next year, I'll submit it early on. And that is exactly what happened. I submitted early during my 2nd try. And we had so much great data for our success with kids, even during COVID. I think it was meant to be that we were more successful in the 2nd round of the application and competition than we would have been in the 1st round.
What do you think elevated your school above all those other entries? Because there were hundreds. I mean, there were a lot of entries.
Yeah, there were, from what I remember, 2,700 entries from around the country. And I think it was great that our school kept moving up in the competition. I think our data really tells the story of our students' success. We really don't run our program like a special ed program. We run our program using best practices for autism, but we infuse so much project-based learning and innovation through STEAM that really it looks like a program that you would see for gifted kids. And that is because that is how we see our kids. Even though they are neurodiverse and learn differently, they are uniquely suited to engage in projects and they come up with fantastic things. You know, my son in particular has been part of a group that has built a self-sustaining tortoise habitat. They started a recycling program and project to make our schools zero waste schools. They drill a lot on foundational skills, but what makes school fun and interesting is that they engage in a lot of collaborative projects. And I would say I did have an advantage because through my background in media, I'm really good at telling the stories of success and where students came from and how much they've grown and how life-changing it is to have a school like this that really elevates their skills, their learning, and that changes the narrative about what kids with autism can do. And so I think all of that together helped us reach the finals and eventually the grand prize. But even with all of that, I was surprised because there were so many amazing competitors and school leaders that I would always tell Mrs. Yaz and Jeannie Allen and the whole team that really the grand prize was getting to meet all of them, all of the school leaders doing innovative work around the country, and now collaborating with them because we just widened our network by hundreds of people who are doing innovative work for kids.
So the big question is, how are you using that prize money?
Yes, that's a great question. So we're going to use it to expand our STEAM and project-based learning work with our students. We have implemented the WAZ STEAM curriculum developed by co-founder of Apple, Steve Wozniak. So if you can imagine, it is the best of the best in STEAM. The kids are learning coding, robotics. Right now, they're learning how to fly drones. And the culminating activity there is that they'll be eligible to get an FAA license to fly drones. And we'll be purchasing more materials because project-based learning and STEAM requires a lot of purchasing of materials. And we want to make this K-12 school-wide and available at each and every school so that from kinder to 12th grade plus, students are continuously engaged in the creative problem-solving process and just, you know, reaching new heights in their project-based learning and what they can do to be ready for post-secondary opportunities. So we'll use part of the prize for that. And then another exciting project that this YAS Prize will fuel is we started the National Accelerator of Autism Charter Schools. And this new entity will aim to support other founding teams like I was when I wanted to start, but had to kind of figure a lot of things out on my own. So this group, the National Accelerator of Autism Charter Schools, is offering training resources and a network of support for other autism moms, other school leaders who want to have a tuition-free autism charter in their city or state.
And I think I understand there's a Florida connection somewhere in there.
Yes. So the National Accelerator of Autism Charter Schools has been founded in partnership with the South Florida Autism Charter School. They've been around for a few years longer than we have and also run a fantastic school and program. So we're just kind of joining forces to be available coast to coast to offer support to other founding teams who want to create the same model without having to reinvent the wheel because the South Florida school and my own school already have a lot of pivotal practices, instructional program, how to best embed the behavioral strategies within the school day. And we just want to offer that to other founding teams. We already have provided support to a group that is on track to open a new autism charter in Louisiana. And we also have supported a first-year autism charter in Texas. So our goal is to have an autism-focused charter in every major city in America. We have so many families who have to uproot and leave their states to be able to access our school. While that is very flattering to us that people would move to be able to attend our school, we really don't think families should have to do that. There are so many kids with autism. It's only a growing population. And there would be room in the marketplace in every major city for one of our schools to make it a viable tuition-free option for families of kids on the spectrum. So that is a lofty goal, but one that we're really committed to because we know the need is everywhere.
Yeah, I can really see that with military families because they have to move so often. And this would really create a way for their child to have a seamless education.
Exactly. Consistency is key for our kids especially. So, you know, we really think that families should have this as an option, regardless of where they live. So we're working on that and we're happy to share all our learnings from the past 10 years because we've been blessed with great results and our families, you know, really enjoy having the school community accessible to them. So we would love to have every family in America have access to it.
Speaking of kids, and there was your own who helped get this all started. You mentioned Sammy is a young adult now. I believe you said he's 20. How's he doing?
He's doing awesome. Just for context, Sammy would be considered level 3 autism. So level 3 is the most severe form of autism. But he is doing so great. He is in our transition academy. So he's learning a lot of vocational skills. He is in a group that does stocking and delivery of teacher supply orders. He's part of the group that is making our school a zero waste school by doing a very intensive recycling program. He helped research and build the tortoise habitat, which I think is his favorite thing. They have a coffee business, so they have learned how to create a business plan. They're learning money management, advertising, and actually how to make the coffee. He is on projects pretty much all day long. He's so happy. He's so engaged. He's so productive. Every time I walk around the school and see all of the amazing things he's doing, I just feel blessed that we were able to do this for him and all his peers. You know, programs for very severe kids are typically not age appropriate and not stimulating for the kids. So then they don't evolve or develop as they grow up. But that is not the case at our school. He's doing amazing things. And actually, he loves coming to school. When we don't have school, that's the hardest part for him. So I'm just happy that we are able to do that. And we're actually expanding our programming to create an adult post-22 entrepreneurial program because definitely want him to have a place as well as all his peers to continue those business and entrepreneurial skills post-high school.
Well, that sounds incredible. Since you've been down this road with a specialty school, what advice would you give somebody who's at the beginning of that journey, who's seeking to open a school that offers an innovative specialized program, not only for students with autism, but any type of specialized program?
I think specialty niche charters are very special. For example, I was very inspired and had the opportunity to be mentored by the founder of my daughter's school. And she went to a performing arts charter. And then, you know, she had her academics at school, but then had amazing ballet training as part of her school day. And at that school, it was a performing arts charter. And so the kids that were a part of that were able to pursue their passion during school. And it really fueled those students to pursue careers, you know, in the arts or anything related to the arts. I know of other schools who do dual language as their charter. So, you know, half of the school day is in a different language and then English on the other half of the day. And those kids come out with the amazing gift of being fully bilingual or trilingual when they finish those programs at those charter schools. So I think that it is a trend that is a positive trend. And if there are founding teams that are committed and passionate for a certain niche, whether it's the arts or languages or STEAM or embedded therapies for kids with neurodiversities or special needs, that should be pursued, because by specializing, you can be excellent and exceptional. And I think our community will follow. There will be so many kids and families who benefit from that. So I think it's a very special part of the school choice movement. And I would encourage anyone who is thinking about going in that direction to pursue it, because I think it'll only enhance the entire school choice movement.